VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Tensions between Israel and Hezbollah increased sharply in recent days after an Israeli airstrike on Beirut killed a senior Hezbollah official as well as dozens of others. On Sunday, Hezbollah fired more than 150 rockets at Israel, damaging homes in northern Israel and sparking fires. Israel continued to fire barrages of rockets at Lebanon. Linda Gradstein reports from Jerusalem.
The Hezbollah rockets on Sunday reached deeper into Israel than at any time since the war between Israel and Hamas began almost a year ago. Israeli analysts say that Hezbollah has suffered a severe blow in the past week, starting when thousands of pagers exploded in a complex operation attributed to Israel. Sarit Zahavi is an expert on Lebanon from the Alma Center.
It's really difficult to have an organizational conduct of an army, and this is what is Hezbollah, when you don't have how to communicate, and 3,000 of your commanders or military operatives basically cannot function.
Israel remains on high alert for further Hezbollah attacks. Schools in northern Israel will remain closed, and hospitals continue to operate underground. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has visited the U.S. state of Pennsylvania ammunition factory that is producing one of the most critically needed munitions for his country's fight to fend off Russian ground forces. His visit to the Scranton Army ammunition plant on Sunday took place under extraordinarily tight security. Zelensky's visit kicked off a busy week in the United States. He will speak at the UN General Assembly annual gathering in New York on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then travel to Washington for talks on Thursday with President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris. This is VOA News. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz's Social Democrats have won an election in the eastern German state of Brandenburg. They gained a narrow edge over a growing far-right party. The vote on Sunday took place 3 weeks after the far-right made gains in two other states in eastern Germany. The far-right party has gained support amid a growing backlash to large-scale migration to Germany over the past decade and recent extremist attacks. A gas explosion in a coal mine in Iran's South Khorasan province killed at least 51 people and injured 20, Iran state media said on Sunday. Reuters correspondent Fiona Jones reports.
It was a methane explosion, according to Iran's state media, and took place in two blocks of a mine run by the Madanju company. State TV reported that there were 69 workers in the blocks at the time of the explosion. President Masoud Pezeshkian expressed condolences to the victims' families, saying the government would learn lessons from the incident.
Reuters correspondent Fiona Jones. U.S. congressional leaders on Sunday announced a spending agreement to keep the government funded until mid-December. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
Time was running out, with a new budget year starting October 1st and no deal in Congress on how to fund government agencies. House Speaker Mike Johnson told lawmakers in a letter, this compromise budget package will be very narrow, bare bones, and it includes only funding extensions that are absolutely necessary. Johnson, who had unsuccessfully tried to link a stopgap funding bill with a proof of citizenship requirement at polling places, was under pressure to avert a government shutdown with less than 40 days to go before the presidential election. I'm Jackie Quinn.
Sri Lanka's election commission announced on Sunday Marxist lawmaker Anura Kumara Dissanayake has won Sri Lanka's presidential election as voters rejected the old political guard that has been widely accused of pushing the nation toward economic ruin. Dissanayake is popular with youth because of his pro-working class politics and criticism of political elite. The election was crucial as the country seeks to recover from the worst economic crisis in its history and political upheaval. The 55-year-old Dissanayake had said he would renegotiate the IMF bailout deal to make austerity measures more bearable for ordinary Sri Lankans. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, September 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The annual United Nations meeting of world leaders got underway Sunday with a summit for the future.
I called for this summit because our world is ebbing off the rails, and we need tough decisions to get back on track.
The UN urges Sudan's rapid support forces to halt its attack on El Fasher. UNICEF says more deaths are being recorded in the Democratic Republic of Congo and Burundi due to mpox outbreak. Kenyan President Ruto visits his country's police contingent in Haiti. Tanzania's main opposition will hold a peaceful protest today, Monday, despite police disapproval.
We are calling for demonstrations precisely because we don't feel protected by the police. We feel we are being victimized, we are being persecuted by the security forces.
And bipartisan calls are made to cool heated political rhetoric in the U.S. presidential campaign. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's polls are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The annual United Nations meeting of world leaders got underway on Sunday with a summit for the future. VOA's UN correspondent Margaret Bashir has more.
The UN General Assembly kicked off a marathon week of diplomacy with a summit for the future. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
I called for this summit because our world is ebbing off the rails and we need tough decisions to get back on track.
The signature event adopted by consensus, a wide-ranging pact for the future, a blueprint aimed at ensuring that international institutions can deliver in a world that has changed dramatically since they were created in 1945. Russia, which raised numerous objections to elements of the pact as the months-long negotiations were wrapping up last week, sought to amend the document moments before its adoption, but failed. The pact has lofty goals for eradicating poverty, ending hunger, and building peaceful and inclusive societies. It also seeks to bridge the digital divide. Now the hard work of implementing it begins. Mia Motley is the Prime Minister of Barbados.
But our people know instinctively that this will only be talk unless there's a fundamental change in what we do and how we do it, and who is seen and heard in the corridors of decision-making.
The Secretary General met one-on-one with several world leaders Sunday, including Leslie Voltaire, a member of Haiti's Transitional Presidential Council. They discussed the need to ensure an elected government is in place by February 2026, as agreed by Haitian stakeholders, and to work together to boost international support for addressing gang violence and the dire humanitarian situation. The wars in Gaza, Ukraine, and Sudan will be center stage this week. Millions of people have been displaced or made refugees from just these three conflicts, and humanitarian efforts to assist them are under strain. Filippo Grandi is the UN High Commissioner for Refugees.
Humanitarians are not stretchable forever. We also have limitations, and I warn decision makers, politicians, that unless they redouble efforts to put a peaceful end or to negotiate ceasefires at least, we are going to be in trouble.
Grandi expressed concern about spillover from the Gaza war, most recently in Lebanon. He told VOA that an expansion of the conflict may have incalculable consequences. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says he is gravely alarmed by reports of a full-scale assault on Sudan's El Fasher by the Rapid Support Forces, the RSF. The spokesperson Stephane Dujarric said in a statement that the Secretary General called on RSF leader Lieutenant General Mohamed Hamdan Hemedi Dagalo to halt the attack. Hussein Shingray is the Foreign Affairs Secretary of the People's Democratic Party of Sudan. He tells me that the RSF is a terrorist organization and should not be treated the same as the Sudan military.
It is very good what they've been thinking or thought about Sudan and about the army. But the only one concern is that they always, when they talk about the rapid force and the Sudanese army, they make them as an equal. And that is wrong, because the Sudanese army is the government official army okay? It is have a diversity of people from east, west, and, you know, all different area, north. But this rabid force is just from the west. They are one tribe or maybe two tribes plus the scattered Arabs from rest of Africa. They think that they are superior. They think that they have to take the Sudan over and it's be their country. Those tribes in scattered in Africa, in Sudan, they call them Janjaweed. In other places, they just call them, some of them like Boko Haram and all those other tribes. Actually, they have a bad influence in anywhere they go. Even in Sudan, when they start this war, they go to the people's houses, they take it from them, they take their wives, you know, they rape them, they take them as a slavery. Right now, they sell them in Chad, in different other countries, as, you know, the sex slaves, and that's what they do.
Whatever the rapid support forces are, they are part of the conflict, and in order to find solution to the conflict, you have to get them involved.
Okay, if you are want to make a solution with Boko Haram, you're going to sit with them and ask them, you know, to be part of the settlement and to join and to be part of the government. The rabid force is the same like Boko Haram. It's the same like Al-Qaeda. It's a terrorist organization. There is no way to sit with them. And those people, you know, they can't agree to anything. If they will say it from their mouth, okay, we agree to that. But they never do that. And the other thing, there is no control. Even the leader, Hemeti, he cannot control them. Because those guys are just being hired for money, for gold, for anything that to steal it. You know, in Khartoum, you know what they did? All the houses, they took the furniture, everything. Everything from the whole city, nothing left in the houses there. They put it in trucks and they ship it to different African countries and they sell it there.
Suppose the Secretary General of the United Nations call on you to say, help the United Nations. How would you like for us to resolve this conflict in Sudan? What would you do?
What I'm saying is we have to fight them the same thing like what we did with Boko Haram, what we did with Al-Qaeda, what we did with any terrorist organization. They have to consider them as a terrorist organization.
Hussein Shingray is the Foreign Affairs Secretary of the People's Democratic Party of Sudan. He was speaking with us from the U.S. state of Maryland. Tanzania's main opposition Chadema Party says it will hold a peaceful protest today, Monday, as a memorial to its leaders who it says have disappeared or been killed under suspicious circumstances. But the police have banned any demonstration in the name of protecting lives and property. Muhammad Ali Kibayo, a senior member of Chadema, was abducted on September 6 in broad daylight. His body was found in the Dar es Salaam neighborhood. President Samia Suluhu Hassan has ordered a swift and thorough investigation. Tundu Lissu is a former Chadema presidential candidate. He tells me that Chadema wants a foreign-led investigation because it does not trust the government.
We are calling for demonstrations precisely because we don't feel protected by the police. We feel we are being victimized. We are being persecuted by the security forces. Our regional and district leaders have been missing. Five of them have been missing for over a month now. They were picked up by people who identified themselves as members of the police force. And apart from our own members and leaders, we have ordinary citizens across the breadth of the country who have been reported missing, abducted by people who identified themselves as members of the security forces, and they have disappeared, thought to have been murdered as well. So these are the kind of things that we organized the protests in order to demand justice for the disappeared, justice for those who have been killed, and accountability for those in positions of authority.
But Mr. Lissu, President Samia Suluhu Hassan has ordered a thorough investigation. Why not wait for the outcome of that investigation?
It's not the first time that we are being promised investigation, which we know and which everybody should know by now, that is just a way of kicking the can down the road. I could go on for a decade or more of instances in which we were promised investigations. None has borne fruit, none. So when the president says that the latest matters should be investigated as soon as possible, we have heard that before. We don't believe her. We don't believe her security forces. We want an independent and international investigation.
As I was reading, the police have banned your demonstration and there is a heavy deployment of law enforcement throughout Dar es Salaam. Did you notify the police?
We notified the police in accordance with the law. And we have been allowed to demonstrate in recent months. But this year we have held numerous demonstrations across the country. They were entirely peaceful because we are a peaceful political party. The police provided assistance as they should. Now, on this particular occasion, in which the police stands accused of participating in the abductions and murders of our citizens, we are notifying them to that we will demonstrate, and they say, no, it will cause a breach of the peace. That is the kind of nonsense that we cannot accept.
Tundu Lissu is the former presidential candidate for Tanzania's main opposition Chadema party. He was speaking with us from Dar es Salaam. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Monday, September 23rd. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Ahead on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Kenya will deploy 600 more police officers to the multinational security support mission in Haiti. During his impromptu visit to the officers in Port-au-Prince, Kenyan President William Ruto called on the United Nations to provide more resources to the Kenya-led mission. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
3 months ago, a group of Kenyan police left the country for Haiti, prompting a debate after President William Ruto defied court orders that had ruled on the police deployment to the Caribbean island nation as unconstitutional. Speaking in Port-au-Prince, Ruto said Kenyan police have achieved much in Haiti despite minimum equipment and resources. He says the team needs more additional personnel to continue fighting the powerful gangs that have taken over the troubled nation.
As you will recall, your deployment was initially met with skepticism, criticism, and pessimism. But because of your courage, your competence, professionalism, and effectiveness in executing your mandate, this mission now enjoys strong national support in Kenya and global acclamation across the world.
The support will fast-track the realization of mission's objective of restoring peace and stability in the nation. Kenya says the mission will help open Haiti's economy and restore normalcy, and that the international community must pay attention to the needs of its people.
I came here specifically to know about your progress, so that friends and partners and many other people who believe in stability and peace can work with me at the UN General Assembly to make sure that you get the requisite support, human capital, equipment, and also other resources to make sure that you deliver on this mandate. I am here also to listen to you. I want to get some feedback. What is the situation and what you would want me to do better or differently?
Ruto also addressed police concerns, which included a lack of clarity on the benefits and compensation for those in the Haitian mission. Otieno Ahonya is one of the Kenyan police officers on mission.
There's one concern about the compensation, which we have never known. In case of anything, what is going to happen? Until now, that has never been tested, and we are not aware.
Experts say the mission's success is not certain and only time will tell the outcome. Kwaku Nwama is a professor in the School of International Service at American University in Washington, D.C.
The Haiti mission has had limited success so far, but it's a vital mission that must be supported. This is why, in my opinion, President Ruto's support for the American proposal to transition it to a full UN peacekeeping after a one-year renewal of the current mandate makes perfect sense. That transition will address the problem of funding, personnel, and the insufficiency of equipment that's currently plaguing the Kenya-led presence.
The president also met with the head of Transitional Presidential Council of Haiti, President Edgar Leblanc. They commended Kenyan officers for their outstanding work in securing critical infrastructure and restoring peace in regions that had proven impossible to stabilize in previous operations. For VOA Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in San Francisco.
The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, says that more deaths are being recorded in the Democratic Republic of Congo and Burundi following the outbreak of mpox. Dr. Douglas Noble is UNICEF's Associate Director of Health for Emergency Preparedness and Response. He tells viewers Chinedu Ofor that more work needs to be done to break community transmission and save lives.
The situation is not yet under control. And now is really the time to act, to make the investments, to support the governments, particularly of Democratic Republic of Congo and Burundi, but also other countries in the region as well, to respond to the outbreak, but also to prepare. The virus is behaving differently in different contexts, and there are different variants of the virus. So there's still a lot that we are learning. For example, in Burundi, there hasn't been any deaths. Whereas here in DRC, there has been quite a considerable number of deaths, around 700 or 800 so far. There are other underlying issues. For example, there are issues related to children who are malnourished. There are issues related to undiagnosed HIV/AIDS. There are underlying issues around water and sanitation issues, for example. And so we're still trying to understand the contextual factors as to what leads this to being more severe in some children and then in other countries being less severe.
A few months ago, there was this concern about mpox vaccine coming into that area. A few weeks ago, there were reports that some got in. Do you have enough mpox vaccine? What is the current situation in terms of availability?
There's always a lot of interests in vaccines. I think the first thing I'd want to say is that vaccines are not a silver bullet for responding to this outbreak. This is very much an outbreak which needs a whole range of interventions to control it. Risk communication and community engagement is critically important so that people are aware of the virus, what it can do, how they can protect themselves, if they get it, how to get help. We need to improve infection prevention and control in communities, in schools and public spaces. We need to make sure that people are well nourished and are immunocompetent so that if they get the disease, their bodies are actually able to handle it. Those things are critically important to breaking community transmission in this outbreak.
What kind of pressures are you and your staff facing in dealing with this problem?
There's a number of different pressures that the staff face. I mean, one is the operating context. I was in a school yesterday in Equateur province in the northwest of Democratic Republic of Congo, and there was no water in the school. Well, that's a real challenge if you look at infection prevention control procedures, for example.
Dr. Douglas Noble is the UNICEF's Associate Director of Health for Emergency Preparedness and Response. You are speaking from Kinshasa with VOA's Chinedu Ofor. Hundreds of Tunisians protested on Sunday against President Kais Saied, accusing him of deepening authoritarian rule and stifling political competition 2 weeks before a presidential election. Amid a heavy police presence, protesters for a second week marched along Tunis's main avenue, a focal point of 2011 Arab Spring Revolution, chanting slogans including "The people want the fall of the regime" and "Out with Dictator Saied." Reuters news agency reports the protest came after lawmakers proposed a bill to strip the administrative court of its authority to adjudicate electoral disputes. The opposition says the move would discredit the October 6th election and paved the way for Saied to secure a second term. Authorities in the Democratic Republic of Congo say 600 prisoners in the country's main prison have been freed as part of a process aimed at decongesting overcrowded prisons. It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with the continent's elite club competitions, the CAF Champions League and the CAF Confederations Cup. The CAF Champions League preliminary round were rounded off this past weekend, just as the Confederation of African Football has announced the dates for the 2024-2025 CAF Champions League and CAF Confederations Cup group stage draw. CAF in a statement said both draws will be conducted on Monday, the 7th of October, 2024. On Sunday, Enugu Rangers were eliminated from the CAF Champions League after losing 3-1 away to Angolan club Sagrada Esperança on Sunday, leaving Nigeria with no representative in the group stage. Rangers went out 3-2 on aggregate after building a one-goal lead in the first leg of the second-round qualifier last weekend. In Cairo, African giants Al Ahly of Egypt stretched a record of not conceding in the CAF Champions League to 1,080 minutes. As they swept into the group stage on Saturday. A record 12-time champions of the Premier Africa Club competition, Al Ahly defeated Kenyan visitors Gomahia 3-0 in Cairo, the same scoreline by which they won the first leg for a 6-0 overall win. Tunisian side Esperance, who lost a 2024 final against Al Ahly that was settled by a single goal, thumped Dakeda of Somalia 8-0 to complete a 12-1 aggregate victory. Young Africans of Tanzania, considered title dark horses, were another side in top form, scoring three added time goals to complete a 6-0 rout of Commercial Bank of Ethiopia. Staying with football news, the South African Football Association Chief Operations Officer Tibogo Motlanthe has confirmed that only 30 registered football agents are permitted to do business in South Africa. Motlanthe revealed that the South African Football Association is moving ahead with implementing the new FIFA agents regulations. And so far, he said there have been three exams conducted since 2023, but the passing rate is not impressive.
Agents who have been there, who had cards which proved that they've been agents, they were economically active. FIFA gave them a chance to do what we call legas. And there are agents who came through that they did not have to come and write the exams.
In athletics, Kenyan athlete Justus Kagongo is aiming to achieve better results in this year's edition of the Berlin Marathon by lowering his personal best time. Kagongo clocked 2 hours, 5 minutes, 57 seconds to finish in the 15th place, but is hoping to run faster during this year's marathon. The Berlin Marathon, scheduled for September 29th, will attract over 50,000 runners from more than 150 nations. And that does it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, September 23rd, and here, edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.
Since the U.S. Supreme Court's historic decision to limit abortion rights, there has been a wave of abortion-related policy shifts around the world, including in Africa. On this week's episode of Our Voices, we will look at the different perceptions and beliefs relating to sexual and reproductive health and the ongoing pro-choice and pro-life debates on the continent. Join the conversation on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC on the...
VOA Africa presents the latest news about Africa and the world and its news summaries. Africa in Brief airs every day at 400, 500 and 600 UTC. Give us 5 minutes of your time to be brought up to date. Africa in Brief, your trusted source for news.
Every Wednesday and Friday at 9 p.m. UTC time with your pilot, Roger Moon, to listen to the RM Show, where you can respond to our question of the week, get some entertainment news, and enjoy some great music. It's all happening at VOA Africa. God bless. Peace, Africa.
This is the voice of America. Washington, Papa Bozet. DC.